Hi, my name is Alex Drain, and this is a short war story. It's about some of my father's experiences from the Second World War. He served with the 4th 5th Battalion of the 52nd Royal Scots Fusiliers from 1939 to 1946. And I wrote this story based upon the very few things that he told me about his war experiences. He rarely talked about his 6 years in the army. What he experienced during the invasion of the Walcheren Islands in Holland at the Battle of the Scheldt, I've put down without too much poetic license. Men did soil themselves. They were terrified. A shell did hit the side of the landing craft. And he did say that the waiting was torture. In addition, the 52nd Royal Scots formed part of the 2nd British Expeditionary Force, the first being evacuated from Dunkirk, and the 2nd BEF travelled 200 miles into France only to be chased back to the coast by the Germans. During the retreat, the 51st, that was the Glaswegians, was nigh on destroyed as they acted as a rearguard. My father always maintained that the escape of the 2nd BEF brought far less publicity because it was mainly Scots who were involved. So this was what he spoke about. Waiting. It's the waiting. No matter what anyone else tells you, it's the waiting. I know. I've been there. The smell was bad too. A man, well, a boy, crouched a few yards away and shat himself. No one said anything. Could just as easily have been one of us. There were 30 odd in the landing craft and I was at the back. The officer and the sergeant, they were up front. Lieutenant was another boy, but he had marbles in his mouth, so obviously he was of the right stuff and far superior to the rest of us. Sergeant was a volunteer, which meant he had no brain. Only an idiot volunteers. Do what your betters tell you, even if it will clearly get yourself and everyone else killed. Always tried to keep well away from him. The officer and his sidekick would be the first off. That sounds bad, but it's really quite good for them. The blokes at the back would carry the heaviest casualties as the Germans got a range and the bullets became concentrated. They told us that when the door went down, the first few men should rush out and go left or right, with the rest following. But what they didn't tell us was that it could be a long, slow shuffle to the front, stepping over the bodies of your pals. And some of the high-velocity rounds coming towards us could go right through more than one person. No one spoke. We just waited. You could sense the disquiet, you could feel the tension, you could smell the fear. There are no jokes now, no bravado. Even the comedians amongst us were quiet. No one spoke. It's difficult to light up when you're shaking. One of the youngsters was trying to stifle his sobbing. I didn't know him all that well, but I knew he'd just had his 17th birthday a few days ago. I hope he has another, but even more so. I hope I do too. The boat chugged on and we waited. This was my first time back on foreign parts since 1940. My regiment, the 52nd, had been sent across to France along with the Glasgow lot of the 51st. We'd marched a couple of hundred miles into France, then were told to dump all our gear and run all the way back to the coast with Germans shooting at us. Our senior officer was nowhere to be found. Reckon he'd got a fast car back to safety. We'd have been slaughtered if the Ouija's hadn't been between them and us. Instead, it was the Ouija's who were slaughtered. I doubt if the High Hedians really cared. They were only Scots. Our retreat took us to Cherbourg, a place I'd never heard of. 9 short months before, I'd never been out of Ayrshire. And now I was in another country, and possibly going to stay there for eternity. Didn't take long for the rumours to start. We knew what had happened at Dunkirk and thought that the Germans wouldn't make the same mistake twice. We expected the worst, especially since it's a long, long way from Cherbourg to England. We could hear the crump of heavy artillery and the scream of dive bombers. We knew it was the 51st who were being pounded, but could only think that we'd be next. The waiting gets to you. I was 21, not the oldest, but certainly not the youngest. There were long lines of us waiting. I've heard it said that we're a polite nation and we'll always wait our turn. The truth of the matter was that we were too frightened to complain. Eventually, my turn duly came and I got shoved onto an old coal boat. It chugged away from land and all of us sitting at the bottom of that filthy wee boat thought there was no way we would make it back home. We could still hear the sounds of battle and could see dive bombers in the distance. Only German planes flew and life was a game of chance. The waiting was terrifying, but luck was with us. The skipper of the coal boat said he thought that the Germans were concentrating on the bigger boats. We were far too small for them to bother about. Cold, filthy, and with nerves frayed to bursting, I got off the boat somewhere on the English coast. None of us had a clue where we were and just hung around until a very clean and very well-dressed officer arrived and told us to march and gather in a field, which was a few miles away. An hour later, we were being given a meal of cold potatoes. They'd kind of been boiled, but not only with their skins on without salt, but they hadn't even been washed. They were really gritty. I hadn't eaten for 4 or 5 days and was absolutely starving, and I really mean starving. This was something else I knew about. My father had been a miner during the 1926 strike, and I knew what starving was and knew how it felt. But these potatoes were delicious. I'll never eat a better or more welcome meal. As things got back to some semblance of normality and I got a new uniform, I discovered that my old uniform was to be paid for out of the little payment that slowly trickled through for a conscripted piece of gun fodder. But what can you do? The officers had to have their shiny badges and couldn't be expected to pick up any bill. I was now in the front line, the first defence of England. I was going to stop the Panzers and the Stukas and the SS with a wooden stave. All of our weapons had been left in France. We could always hit the Nazis over the head with my stick. The next few years passed slowly. There was a lot more waiting. Unfortunately, the waiting didn't mean I could have time off to visit my father before he died. I was told there was a war on and I was needed for the waiting. But there was a lot of training during the waiting. Our officers were very brave in training and could always be seen leading from the front. It was just bad luck, of course, that some got a tummy bug and couldn't accompany us on our current adventure, where now there were real Germans shooting and trying to kill us. But then, as the death toll rises, there will always be other men to train, and I'm sure those same brave officers will still lead the training from the front. We trained in the Cairngorms, where we learned to be elite mountain troops. By 1944, I could ski cross-country and was more than adequate in the downhill. I could bivvy in deep snow and blend into the landscape in my whites. So, why am I here in this landing craft with 30-odd other mountain-trained soldiers heading for Walcheren in Holland? Nay hills, nay snow, and nay skis. Clever blokes, our generals. Pity none of them are waiting here with us. A deafening clang and a lurch of the boat ended my musing and threw us all off our feet. The moment's silence was broken by screams and everyone shouting at once. I was a corporal by now and should maybe have taken the lead when I saw what had happened, but I couldn't speak. Another of the men shouted for calm. At the top of his voice, he said we'd been hit by a shell that hadn't exploded. There was a huge dent in the side of the calf and I could see that it had been a glancing blow, a lucky one. Things quietened down, but the tension had risen even higher. I could feel my heart racing. I was young, very fit, and knew that my heart could quite easily hit 180 during football, but it was over 200 now, at rest. The officer remained in his bum at the front. He was in a couple of inches of water. Well, some of it was probably water, but he clearly didn't care. He was most likely adding to the water. I slowly raised my head till I could just about see over the iron top. There were a number of other landing craft, some ahead, some behind. No doubt the men inside were waiting, just like us, and terrified, just like us. One of the other boats was veering off course and appeared to be going sideways. I guess their steering mechanism was damaged somehow. I thought of the men in that one and how they must be feeling. It's bad enough heading towards a battle, but to just sit there, waiting for a shell to hit, must have been agony. I was told by one of the sailors, "Get your head down." His actual words were less than polite, but I certainly got the message. Bullets pinged off the landing craft and tracer could be seen overhead. All of the ordnance was one way. There was no support from the ships. We'd heard that in D-Day the Royal Navy had bombarded the Germans defending the coast, but they were nowhere to be seen today. Perhaps the shallow water wasn't ideal for them, and if it cost the lives of additional men, I'm sure the officers thought it would be worth it. Maybe that was why they didn't send senior officers in with the gun fodder. Maybe they didn't like the waiting. We were only a few hundred yards from the beach. My glance over the top had allowed me to see some of what we were heading towards. I couldn't see individuals, but there were plenty of puffs of smoke from rifles and machine guns. I knew from training that if one of those machine guns managed to get the range for the landing craft when the door went down, we'd likely lose a high percentage of our complement. I wished I'd never looked over, but I suppose the waiting was also just about over. One of the sailors shouted to the lieutenant to get ready, and in his reedy voice, the boy tried to encourage us. I haven't a clue what he said, and I didn't care anyway. I was now 25 years old and considered to be a veteran, but I was just as terrified as the teenagers. There was a scraping sound as the craft touched the bottom of the shore, and it kept going. All eyes were now glued to the front door. The scraping got louder and became constant. The tension had me almost crying. My eyes were popping. I licked my lips and swallowed. I shook and gripped my rifle hard to stop it falling. I shut my eyes for a few seconds. I opened them, saw that the others were doing the same. No one talked. Swallowed again. We all waited. The door began to drop open. And the waiting was over. Thank you for listening.